This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Good to be with you today. Matt and Patrick. Still feeling better, Patrick. Still here. Still doing okay.
Glad to hear you're feeling better.
The way things are going, would you not say, well, Matt's not here today because he's on the iron lung. How did that happen? It's been a rough week, man. This is, you know, there were a few times, and if you listened to this show in the last year, holy God. There were a few times you heard me kind of get to my limit. This was one of those weeks where it's just like, ugh. And it's not because, there's a lot of news going on, some of it bad, some of it good. But it has a lot more to do with just my personal stuff that's been going on. And it just is, it's been rough. It's been a rough one. I appreciate, and I want to make sure I say this, I appreciate the insane amount of nice comments and well wishes that you guys have given me. That has helped, undeniably. It has been, like I said, there were a few days this week. It was pretty dark. But you guys, I appreciate the help. Thank you very much. I am here today. I plan to be here next week. We're working through the schedule. As things go, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Yesterday, Patrick, you and I talked about the bell and the wheel and how, the veterans, if you're a real veteran, you know, the idea of jamming this in some high school. And once again, reminder, the bell was being used as a prop for football games. That's not respecting the bell in any capacity. It was down in the weight room getting smacked whenever a Minnetonka football player got a new bench pressing record. That's not respecting the troops any way, shape, or form, period. But I did hear back, Patrick, from a lot of veterans, well, a few of them, that did comment that people that were listening locally here in the Twin Cities, and of course some veterans listening nationwide, who did say, like, no, what is this guy doing? So, because I think we all can agree, all right, let's try to take an angle which defends the rogue legionnaire. I like to call him thief. But they wanted to call him a rogue legionnaire. I'll go with thief. Let's take an angle which might have tried to spin this in the most positive light I possibly can to give this guy the benefit of the doubt. And once again, if you did me the story, the USS Minnesota and the USS Minneapolis, there was a bell and a wheel at a memorial on Bede Mikaska that basically disappeared. And eventually was tracked down to Minnetonka High School. And you discover that one legionnaire from the American Legion basically on his own took down the wheel, took down the bell, and gave it to Minnetonka High School as opposed to leaving it up. So he desecrated a military memorial. He desecrated a military memorial. He stole military artifacts. He fraudulently presented it. If you look at the letter that he submitted with the artifacts to Minnetonka High School, he fraudulently claimed this was part of the American Legion. American Legion didn't give him any authorization. That was from the story yesterday. Navy, the U.S. Navy, the American Legion, nor did the Minneapolis Parks Board. No one gave this guy authorization to do this, but he kind of made it seem like the American Legion. So there's some fraud involved there, too. At least it sure looks like this. And the fact that it was something that he and his brother-in-law, who is a football coach at Minnetonka, discussed at a family gathering, I'm going to suspect over beers or liquor of some sort. I'm just going to take a guess. That this was premeditated. And so they took this and they were there, and then they did not – the craziest part is when Minnetonka High School was informed, oh, you've got stolen military memorials – they didn't want to give them back. And they were saying, no, they're ours now. No, they're not. They're the veterans. And, it's, I've torn apart the school because this is just asinine. This is very, you know, like I said, very Switzerland of you. But let's go back to the thief that stole these things. I had a few veterans get in touch, and we started to, you know, I started kind of a little bit of a dialogue with a friend of mine and said, okay, what could be the best case scenario? All right, so say the Minneapolis Parks Board, and it does not sound like Minneapolis Parks Board was maintaining the military memorial as it should have been. I'm not going to deny that. There definitely sounds like the agreement was that it would be on display at Bede-Makaska, that they would people would be able to go see this, and it's in a very prominent – you've seen it. It's the mast is there. It's right there on the – what would be the East Bede-Makaska Parkway and Lake Street. Right there, right on the corner of Bede-Makaska. And by the way, Bede-Makaska is a big lake in Minneapolis, if you're wondering. And so Bede-Makaska, it was on that lake, and if the parks and Minneapolis Parks and Rec was supposed to maintain it and keep that up, well, that's a bit of a problem. And we talked about the memorial for the 35W bridge collapse. Then I went over there, and this was a while back, but I don't know if you remember the show. I went over there. Is that Powderhorn Park that's over that way? And I went over, and the memorial for the victims of the 35W bridge collapse had completely overgrown. There was weeds everywhere. There was graffiti all over it. I mean, it was really unfortunate, and what was supposed to be a nice vista to see out over the where the bridge had collapsed was instead an overgrown mess, and it didn't look that good. So, I mean, the Parks Department does have a bit of a problem with this. But there's a far cry from, boy, the Minneapolis Parks is not fulfilling this, to I, as an individual, am going to become a vigilante and steal these things, Robin Hood them, and take them and then give them to Minnetonka High School? I mean, that's the, you know, it's not like you went and tried to give them to the Minnesota Historical Society or the Hennepin History Center. You went and tried to give them to a high school, which then used them as a prop for football games, which is just absolute garbage, just absolute garbage. If you had a problem with what Minneapolis Parks Board is, then you're part of the American Legion. You bring it up to the American Legion. The American Legion acts, goes out there, takes down the artifacts because the American Legion would probably be able to know how to handle them and preserve them and store them correctly, not in some high school gym's weight room, and could hold them at the American Legion post and contact the Minneapolis Parks Board and say, hey, I'm just going to let you know, we just took down all the memorials because you guys aren't maintaining it. And if you guys aren't going to maintain it, well, we are not going to leave this stuff out there just so it gets destroyed. I don't think anyone, I think we could all agree that would probably be the course of action if that was the case. What's not the course of action, and this is something that, once again, multiple veterans and I agreed with, is for one individual to make a decision to take a veterans memorial, a military memorial, and take it from a public viewing area, such as that park, and hide it out in a school. Which, once again, it's a public school, but you can't just go into that school and see this stuff. And they sure as heck weren't exactly advertising they had the bell and the wheel there, were they? No, of course not. So, no, I am beyond belief that this guy hasn't been arrested. Because can you imagine? Think about this. Imagine if you had an African-American man in the cities on camera stealing the bell and the wheel and taking it. Can you imagine every single Republican in the state going bonkers? I mean, every one of them. How dare he? Even if he said, hey, I'm a veteran myself, they weren't taking care of it, I went to try to preserve it someplace, they would say, it was thieves. You are a thief. You stole them. And the reality is the fact that this guy, this rogue legionnaire, has got so many people making excuses for him is, in my mind, disgusting. If you want to know the truth, it really is. I'm not a fan of it. But needless to say, the multiple people... multiple veterans I talked to since the show all agree this guy should probably go to jail. And depending on the state, some states actually have some very serious penalties if you violate a military memorial. And my guess is going to be is no Republican's going to champion that bill right now because it was it a white guy in Minnetonka? Well, we can't upset those people. 952-946-6205. By the way, speaking of, I heard they had their Mother's Day coming on up today. Or not today, on Sunday. It is coming up Mother's Day early this year, May 9th. I hope everyone out there is hello to all the mothers out there. Hi there. How you doing? I hope you have a wonderful Mother's Day. It is truly a wonderful thing. All my best to all the mothers out there. Of course, got some plans for myself. But if you're looking for plans, I want to give a shout-out. You want to sign things are starting to get back to normal. Our good friends at the Park Tavern, they're having their Mother's Day brunch again. This is from 10 until 2, cafeteria style they're doing it this year. They got the stuff. They got the smoked salmon. They got the shrimp cocktail, prime rib. The breakfast items, all the breakfast, 10 until 2, Mother's Day, Park Tavern. Good to see those guys getting back up again. There's a lot of businesses I was worried about. Park Tavern was one of them, and they have weathered the storm. Phil and the crew over there doing a great job. Get a chance, stop on by, enjoy some of the great food over there. We'll probably be talking about some of the stuff. They got the patio going to be opening up. We'll probably be talking about that stuff coming up here as we get into the summer. But once again, Park Tavern, if you want to do the Mother's Day brunch, call them today. You want to get that those last reservations. Call the Park Tavern. Once again, it's on May 9th from 10 until 2 for that enjoyable event. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I think I'll start with the Minnesota coronavirus update today. I'll get that knocked out first. As the COVID vaccination rate remained just below 60%, but the reporting on Friday of nearly 14,000 more first-dose shots nudged the state towards Governor Walz's new 70,000 trigger for the end of the state indoor mask mandate. The total of 2,628,225 people 16 and older who received at least a first dose of COVID-19 vaccines left Minnesota only 459,179 shots short of reaching that statistical goal. So we need basically a little more than 450,000 more people to get vaccinated. Call your friends. Let's get this over with. I'm all for that. Walz, in announcing the goal on Thursday, said he hoped he would convince more people to seek the shots in exchange for a quicker return to normalcy. Although he ultimately pledged to end the mask mandate no later than July 1st, we can do it awfully fast, the governor said, of reaching the 70% goal. Several restrictions designed to slow transmission of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 ended on noon on Friday, despite some of the declines in pandemic activity leveling off in Minnesota. The positivity rate in COVID-19 diagnostic testing has dropped to 5.8% from a peak of 7.5% on April 8th. But the rate of decline for that key indicator of viral spread in Minnesota has slowed. The state on Friday reported 12 COVID deaths, 1,453 diagnosed new infections, bringing the state totals to 7,216 deaths, 7,216 deaths, 585,677 known infections. The newly reported deaths included a Hennepin County resident in their 30 to 34 range, the 31st COVID-19 death in Minnesota involving someone younger than 35. Once again, let me just go back to the Republicans who say, this only kills old people. If I told you before this all began, oh my God, we're going to have 30-plus people, 30 to 34 years old, that die in the state of Minnesota, we need to act, would anyone have kind of said no? Of course we would have done something. But because, you know, the Republicans have turned everything about this political, it's kind of just, you know, these statistics are just tough to take. Only one of the 12 deaths involved a resident of long-term care, assigned the vaccine effectiveness because the vulnerable population was prioritized. Hospitalizations of COVID-19 in Minnesota dropped slightly to 560 on Thursday, included 144 people who needed intensive care. Most outdoor restrictions ended at noon. Other than a provision on the mandate requiring workers to wear masks if they can't maintain social distancing to do their jobs, masks also remain required at indoor and outdoor entertainment venues hosting more than 500 people. So Twins games could be open if anyone wants to go to one. Twins games could be open. They're going to have masks in there if you're going to be 500 people, which is the stadium. You're going to have a mask in there. Outdoor events are really pretty open. Parades, festivals, gatherings in parks. All these events that are so great about summer, said Steve Grove, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. State Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm urged Minnesotans to keep our guard up with indoor mask wearing and social distancing to continue the downward trajectory in pandemic activity upon which the latest rollback of restrictions was based. The next mitigations will be the 28th. We'll eliminate the capacities and caps on social distancing restrictions and overall. When the mask mandate will end is unclear. Now, it could end. Someone brought up this point. He said that if you just vaccinated 14,000 people, which is what we did today, if you vaccinated 14,000 people per day, that we'd actually get there on June 4th or 5th. That's it. I'll take that as a dare, folks. Let's get that done. And I get it. A lot of the people who are left are these ones that are going out there screaming, MAGA! I get it. You can't help the people that are just going to refuse. But there are a lot of people out there who just maybe tried and got frustrated because it was hard to get an appointment time. There could be a lot of reasons. Just contact your friends, contact your family, make sure everyone that's been vaccinated can get vaccinated. And if someone hasn't been, well, help them get in touch with the right people. There's so many options right now. We can beat this and we can get back to true normal here in Minnesota. And I said this and this wasn't me. I didn't come up with this. This is someone else said this. But if you said to get into the state fair this year, you need to have a vaccination card. I guarantee you, you'd have 95% vaccination rate in this state by June 1st. I guarantee it. Maybe we should twist a few arms. Maybe State Fair could step up on this, saying we want to see your vaccination card when you come in. That one way to get this done. Heck, we might even be closer to 98-99% if you think about that. I can tell you this right now. I don't care if it's hot. I don't care if it's pouring rain. I don't care if it's cold. That state fair is going to be freaking packed this year. It will. Sign on the cross. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. More of the Minnesota Coronavirus Update when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show from Axios Twin Cities. Immediately after Governor Walz announced his plan to fully reopen up Minnesota, Republican Senate leader Paul Gazelka said the plan was not good enough, not soon enough. Oh, I'll get back to Paul here in a second. Walz's timeline puts Minnesota in the middle of the pack when it comes to lifting restrictions and ditching masks. In Republican-led states, especially in the South, they've been without restrictions or with few restrictions for months. Walz is well behind the neighboring states like Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota. They no longer have restrictions, but Illinois and Michigan have had mask mandates and business restrictions. Wisconsin restrictions and mask mandate put in place by the governor were struck down by its Republican Supreme Court, though some cities have kept their own restrictions in place. It should be noted, first of all, many of the Republican states were having horrible outbreaks. And it also should be noted that many of the Republican states, they passed laws that basically almost prevent the medical professionals from claiming someone died from COVID. That if someone died from coronavirus but had cancer, that there are some states where you have to list the cancer first, even though they might not have died of cancer, because they are desperately trying to keep the numbers down. As a matter of fact, what was it? The Washington State survey, a Washington State University survey. I thought I saw this in the Post. They estimate actually the death count in the United States is probably twice as bad as it actually has been reported. Where was that? Was it in Florida? Where they had the doctor was claiming the guy died of gout because he had gout and he died of coronavirus, and they actually had to go to court to prove that he died to get the death certificate changed. But because he was told he had to, put down pre-existing conditions, he listed gout as the cause of death. It was disturbing. So, I don't trust Republican states, and they sit there and they say, we're for freedom and liberty. Well, we're for freedom and liberty, too. We're just not for killing off, our residents needlessly. You are. That's your call. You want to kill your residents off. That's your business. We actually care about human life in democratic states. We don't want necessarily to see you guys just make a lot of people sick that don't necessarily need to be.
Walls and Flam puts him near the front of Democratic governors, though, for lifting restrictions. Colorado Governor Jared Polis had been one of the more aggressive Democratic governors for easing restrictions. He's largely allowing counties to impose their own regulations. Pennsylvania planning to fully reopen on May 30th, although the same pace as Minnesota. New York, California, Oregon will all lift restrictions in some degree through May and June, but many other blue states still don't have a plan of in lifting restrictions at all. So, Governor Walz has done a pretty good job here, if you ask me, and I think that he's tried his hardest to keep as many of us safe as possible, which does bring up this amazing tweet here from Jennifer Carnahan. I have to point out one thing about this tweet, though. Let me read the tweet. This is from Carnahan, the head of the Minnesota GOP. The politicization of COVID by the left, which includes Governor Walz, is what costs lives. Wow. Destroyed businesses, impacted our kids' education, killed our seniors, and turned this world upside down. Let's not sell it as something it never was. No, the left never did try to make this political. I saw this tweet, and the tweet that was right before it was a tweet for a Republican candidate for governor in New Jersey saying that mask mandates are unconstitutional. So as Jennifer Carnahan is saying, we didn't politicize this. You did. The tweet right before her, and actually there's a tweet right after her as well, that basically showed, oh no, this Republicans, they were the ones behind this. It is comical that they did this. And the DFL put together an amazing timeline here. Gazelka is continuously this is Paul Gazelka, the head of the Senate, the highest elected elected official in state, the head of the Senate, although he didn't really win a statewide race. He just won his, easy to mail it in district and through gerrymandered, districts. Basically, he was able to hold power. Gazelka has continuously misled the public about the state of COVID-19 at virtually every turn. Almost a year ago, on July 13, 2020, he falsely claimed the emergency part of this pandemic is over. Since that statement, the U.S. lost more than 440,000 people to COVID-19. He was saying the pandemic was over in July 13th of 2020. Who could forget October 19th? Gazelka pushed for Minnesota to completely reopen. They did that press conference out on the Capitol steps. Completely reopened, advocated for eliminating all state safety measures. The plan to reopen the state and eliminate COVID-19 precautions came right before Minnesota's largest surge in COVID-19 cases and deaths to date. And we can never forget the same. And once again, Jennifer Carnahan is claiming the people who are responsible for politicizing COVID were the Democrats. No. The Republicans had a 100-person maskless dinner for Senate Republicans, resulting in a COVID-19 outbreak among the Minnesota Republican lawmakers. As the virus spread, Senate Republicans warned their Republican colleagues about the outbreak, but refused to notify their DFL colleagues. That is the textbook definition of politicizing the pandemic, Jen, Grand Canyon. For God's sakes. And they basically didn't tell this, even as some lawmakers were gathered for in-person special session. One of the state senators who tested positive eventually died. That was Senator Jerry Ralph. Likely killed by the Republicans' bravado. Likely killed by Paul Gazelka and the bravado of the Senate Republicans. Unbelievable. And even though the day before Ralph passed away, Gazelka had a press conference to call for the end of all COVID-19 safety measures for restaurants. Come on. Who's been screaming, masks are unconstitutional? That's been Republicans. Who've been saying, vaccines have got tracking chips in them? That's been Republicans. Who has said, comically, before pretty much every major outbreak, open up everything. It's safe now. Republicans. Jen, you should be grateful that Governor Walz once again saved the Republican Party from yourselves. Because, frankly, I fear what this state's death toll would have been with your clown car of a party in charge. You probably would have killed 20,000 people in this state and then insisted, we did such a great job!
Yeah. You're a bunch of hacks. That's what you guys are. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. We'll get into some more news. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's deceptive outside, Patrick. Looks so nice, but it's got a little bit of a chill out there.
That's what I was thinking yesterday. I'm like, I've never felt so cold when it's 61 degrees.
Good news is we talked to yesterday. We had, of course, had Sven on the air. And it does look things are going to clear on out here. And by the especially by the next weekend, we'll be back up in the 70s, maybe even 80, which will be really nice there. So, but yeah, it's it doesn't it looks much nicer than it is out there. It's May, though. It's May. I mean, this is kind of normal May. We get so untwisted now because we have normal temperatures. And, you know, I always learned don't plant your garden until really about the 15th to the 20th because it can get too cold. So I hope you get out there and you're going to enjoy. Good news for you, Patrick. It's time. You know, it's spring when Byron Buxton is headed to the DL. Just when you didn't think this team could have any more problems, player of the month for April is now on the bench. Hamstring, wasn't it?
Yeah, hamstring. Could be multiple weeks.
Yes, it could. Of course it will be. Of course it will be. And you got everyone except for Donaldson and Cruz and, well, and you know, La Tortuga, you know, trying to swing for the fences every time they're back. Gosh. I can't believe – I like Rocco Baldoli. I really do. I like Rocco. I can't believe how bad he's mismanaging this team right now. And I don't know what happened if he lost all of his assistants and that's where he's having the problems. But, God, this is just – it's embarrassing to watch. I mean, it's feeling like – it was like that last year of Molitor where you just kind of knew, yeah, he's just not going to work. And, of course, we started off that year. Was it 0-13? It's kind of how I feel right now about this team. I have zero doubt this team is going to turn around. So, and without Byron Buxton, who usually gets injured, well, guess what? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. On that positive note, there are two stories here I want to get into in regards to, obviously, George Floyd. A federal grand jury has indicated four former Minneapolis police officers are using their official authority to deprive George Floyd of his civil rights. An indictment unsealed on Friday charges the four officers, Derek Chauvin and the other three who showed up there, of deprivation of rights under the color of law. Chauvin was convicted of murdering Floyd last month, and the three other officers are scheduled to stand trial on charges of aiding and abetting murder and manslaughter in August. Chauvin also faces an additional count for a 2017 incident in which he pinned his knee on a teenager's neck. Good. I'm glad they went back to that one. And he pinned his knee on a teenager's neck and upper back even after the 14-year-old was handcuffed and in the prone position, causing injury, according to the indictment. The federal government has a responsibility to protect the civil rights of every American and to pursue justice in the fullest extent of federal law, said Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. Federal prosecution for the violation of George Floyd's civil rights is entirely appropriate, particularly how that Derek Chauvin has been convicted of murder under Minnesota's law for the death of George Floyd. The Department of Justice is separately conducting a pattern and practice investigation of the Minneapolis Police Department. Good, because clearly there is some element. I think it's the police union. You might want to look at the police union. Just saying that. You might want to look at the police union. But someone within that police department sure has tolerated a lot of crap cops for a heck of a long time. Might want to check. Police union. Full investigation. Just saying. Someone in the department. Someone in there seems to be tolerating real crap police work. Huh. They don't seem to think protect and serve really matters to them. Yeah. And by the way, just in time for you to need more validation, I don't know if you saw the Care 11 story. Brace yourself. I mean, it's what you're going to expect, but it still is just hard to see that clearly. Racism is part of the training of the Minneapolis police. It is. New data shows that the majority of drivers pulled over this year by Minneapolis police for minor equipment violations were black. Care 11 analysis had found black drivers account for more than half of the stops so far in 2021, despite making only about 20% of the city's residents, according to city data. Now, I know racist guys. Okay, if more than 50, more than half of the stops, more than 50% are of black drivers, and they only make up 20% of the residents, there's an extreme bias here. When you factor in the relative population size of each group, the gap is even greater. Since 2017, black drivers have been searched at a 29 times the rate of whites, according to Care 11 analysis of city data. Thanks, Bob Kroll. I want to repeat that number. Black drivers have been searched 29 times the rate of white drivers. Bob Kroll's, that's Bob Kroll's the police department right there, isn't it? Sure sounds like it. Sure sounds like it. The disparity in traffic stops has continued despite promises by city leaders to address racial discrimination in policing in the wake of George Floyd's death last year. Care 11's analysis of the city traffic stop data found racial disparities have only gotten worse from 2017. In fact, the percentage of blacks stopped for equipment violations has shot up from 54% in 2017 to 62% so far in 2021. Wow. I don't know. Is that just they're pulling less white people over? Or is this the police saying, you know what? You think that we're going to stop? Well, we're going to show you that we're not. I don't know. The gap between black drivers being pulled over compared to whites may be even greater than the data shows. Minneapolis police have been increasingly marking race as unknown after stopping and driving, doing so about half the time this year compared to only a quarter of 2016. Yeah. So this is just of the data we know, but it sounds like police are hiding what they're doing by marking the race unknown half the time this year. Okay, so they're already up to 62% of all vehicle stops for equipment violations are of black drivers, and that might actually be woefully low as far as percentage because the police are specifically not tracking the data as they should. Wow. Minneapolis police have increasingly, Jay Wong, a Huntington County public defender who has done his own analysis of Minneapolis traffic stops, said the data illustrates a clear problem. Look outside. Nationwide, we have an issue where the disproportionately getting black men and women into the criminal justice and into prisons, the whole pipeline, and that whole pipeline starts with the initial police contact with officers. The racial gap becomes a canyon when you analyze the number of times a traffic stop for equipment violations results in the search of a vehicle. Care 11's own analysis of the city data confirmed that black drivers are stopped for equipment violations and searched far more often than whites in Minneapolis. Black drivers have accounted for 77% of those searches since 2017, about three out of every four. Well, no, that's not about three. That's more than three out of every four. I don't know which math you went to, for goodness sakes. 77 is more than three quarters of the time the vehicle searches are of black drivers. And I want to remind you, 20% of the city's population is black. Wow. That's insanity. I mean, how these numbers are unbelievable. I mean, the racism that's being exposed here is there's no excuse for it. It's just we stop black people. This is why I said at the beginning of this conversation, they are teaching racism in the policing training. It's got to be. It's the only way. You have to purposely be going out of your way to do this much. By contrast, white drivers accounted for only 12% of the searches. That makes the risk that blacks would be stopped and searched for equipment violations 29 times that of whites. Wow.
This is still true so far this year. Records show 32 black drivers have been stopped and searched. Compare that to only one white driver. Not only are traffic stops involving black drivers more likely to result in vehicle searches, Wong's analysis showed that Minneapolis Police Department searches of black drivers were often fruitless. He found most drivers were let go with nothing was after nothing was found. Most black drivers are being stopped. More black drivers are being searched, and black drivers aren't necessarily doing anything wrong. Things aren't being found. To me, that's one of the reasons why they are on a fishing expedition. That's exactly it. I mean, it's, you know, trust me, racist America feels as if anytime a black person gets pulled over, well, they're committing a crime, they just haven't been caught. That's racist America. Well, isn't that echoed by what the police are actually doing here? You're looking for a reason to arrest these people. You're looking for a reason. And I mean, are you depressed? Does the Minneapolis police have a helpline for whenever you pull over in search of a black person's car and you don't find a crime? You know, do you have a big cuddle hug? What's going on, you guys? Jesus Christ. This is, you know, you want to know, I mean, Minneapolis became the launching point of all this. But one of the reasons why Minneapolis was the launching point of this is because the Minneapolis cops are atrocious. And they're atrocious because of the police union. They're atrocious because the Republicans in the state have basically, the Republicans need the police to do these things so they can go back to their racist districts. Not all the people in the districts are racist, but a lot of them vote Republican and go to, and because that's who the party is, that's who drives the party right now. The racists, the bigots, those are the people that are driving the Republican Party right now. Those are the people. Why do you think no Republican can go out there and condemn Trump for January 6th? Because in their mind, they still think he was right. So they can't go on out there and try to upset the base. And these people, at best, they allow racism to exist. At worst, they agree with the racism. And these Republicans in the state go back to their districts where the racists are at and say, see, we're keeping those people in line. It's the police union. It's the Republican Party. You got to tear down the whole system and start from scratch just because you got to get rid of that police union contract. And that's the only way I think you're going to be able to do it. Because this is insanity. This is insanity. Minneapolis police spokesman did not respond to a request for comment for the story. Gee, really? Critics claim police often use minor violations as excuse or pretext to look for other issues. They cite the 2016 death of Philando Castile. He was shot and killed after being pulled over for a broken taillight. Records show it was a pretext stop. Care 11 obtained a copy of the police radio traffic showing an officer told dispatches the real reason he was pulling Castile over was because he thought he looked like the suspect of an armed robbery because he had a wide-set nose, a.k.a. black. Castile had no connection with the crime for which he was stopped. The issue was highlighted again last night when Brooklyn Center police stopped Dante Wright for expired license tabs. When police when officers discovered Wright had an outstanding warrant, they tried to arrest him and was shot in a misdemeanor warrant. They tried to arrest him. He was shot and killed when an officer said she pulled her gun instead of her taser when she tried to escape. Traffic stop data for Brooklyn Center is not available, but for records for nearby Brooklyn Park show that half of those stopped were black drivers over the last 5 years, even though they make up a quarter of the city's population. Brooklyn Park, once again, let me read this. They have a quarter of the city's population. That half of the stops there are black people, though. An overall disparity in traffic stops and Wright's recent death prompted Representative Cedric Frazier, a DFL legislator from New Hope, to put forward a bill that would ban traffic stops for minor violations like having a broken taillight or expired vehicle tab registration. Frazier believes it's likely Dante Wright would be alive today if officers were forbidden from being able to stop him for expired tabs. I say no, Representative, with all due respect, and I agree with you wholeheartedly on this. they would have figured out some other reason to pull him over. And frankly, here's what I'm going to say, and I'm at this point. The cops will just make up something. I thought I saw a gun. He drove by, and I thought I saw a gun. And they'll just make up something else. Because once again, what we are seeing here, what this excellent reporting here by Kara Levin is showing us, is that the racism is being built into the police training at this point. You could have mailed him a letter saying you had these expired tabs. However, Frazier says his bill would also allow police to pull drivers over if a license plate check reveals an arrest warrant like the one Wright had, or a driver's behavior creates a threat to human life. This is absolutely to minimize minor traffic violations and minimal impacts to stuff that decrease those interactions that could lead to dangerous and deadly outcomes. 29 times more likely. And once again, going back to some of those numbers, we got a reminder that they are not listing the ethnicity of the driver they're pulling over on a lot of them. So it could actually be a hell of a lot worse. How can we as a society tolerate this? What we've created is this. I'll tell you what. I got to get into a break here. I'll explain why, how we've gotten to this point. And I've already alluded to it before, but I'll come back and explain it again. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. So what we really have got is as the Republicans have done with everything, they politicized the police. And because they have built a system whereby appealing to rural parts of this country, they have entrenched themselves like a deer tick in there. And then all they have to do is basically either gerrymander districts or win one or two other seats by running I'm really not one of those guys candidate who clearly turns into one of those guys candidates. And what you get is this idea is that this is what in rural Minnesota, this is what kind of policing they like. In rural Minnesota, the voters that vote for Republicans like the fact that black people are pulled over and treated and have knees on the back of their necks. They like that. They like the fact that the police, you know, terrorize them and make them afraid. Because they're ignorant fools who think that all black people are committing crime. And the Republicans, who have zero spine and zero guts, will never challenge that. They're never going to come on out. They'll never come on out there and say, boy, these numbers are horrible. We should not have a police department that's treating these people this badly. I mean, this is clearly racism within policing. They're never going to do that. Because they know if they say that, that's going to anger too many of their voters, and he's going to be weak on those people. And I said, and I tell for many years, Bob Kroll was just a political hack. He realized the power of his position, and it worked for him. He got in there to see Donald Trump. He got in there to hobnob. He was able to go on Fox News, do all these things. The reality is that, you know, you have to ask the question, if this is what the Republican Party has become, and this is the kind of policing that they're trying to encourage, and Bob Kroll, as the union head, is trying to appeal himself to those Republican voters, is this the kind of, you know, how much of that trickled down into the voters? The fact that we have that civil rights case now against Chauvin, where we had the 2017 case, where he clearly should have been thrown off the force then, but I don't believe he was ever punished for that. I said during the Chauvin trial that it would be interesting to see how that would have played out if Derek Chauvin would have come into the courtroom and said, here's the deal. I know what the manual says. I know what my superiors have said. But the police union, and I'm not saying I know this for a fact. I'm just saying this is the hypothetical defense that I would have been interested to see put forward. If Derek Chauvin came on out and said, Well, the police union told us we didn't have to pay any attention to that. We could do whatever we wanted to because we'll never be held accountable. Then all of a sudden, that's a very different trial. That's a very different trial. And I'm sure the police union would kind of be out there saying, no, but I mean, the question then all of a sudden becomes is then all of a sudden Chauvin himself brings his own record in saying, hey, I kneeled on a guy's neck back in 2014 and I, you know, nothing bad happened to me then. 2017, nothing bad happened to me then. So I was, you know, I was always praised by the union. So I'm going to guess that that was okay. It becomes a much more difficult case to, I think, prosecute. And like I said, I don't have any information that any of that was actual factual. I'm just talking about Chauvin's defense, what he could have pitched in that trial. But the reality is you've got Republicans that enable certain opportunists who happen to be in charge of the police union at the Minneapolis Police Department. And those Republicans are pandering to the most racist people we have in the state. And we have a police department now that's got one of the most racist records in the entire country. You know, it's pretty easy to draw some straight lines here. I don't think it's necessarily hard to figure out how in the world we got here. It just is. We need to stop this. And when you've got it this bad and they seem to be trying to make it worse, well, then, like I said, I think you got to tear down the whole system and start over from scratch. Hour two of the show. That's up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Johnson, kind enough to join us. You and I have talked about the Chauvin trial. Is that, and that is one of the things I will always be wondering about. And once again, I'm not saying this has actually happened. I want to be very clear about this. I'm talking about what Chauvin would have presented as his defense. And if he would have come on out there and said, hey, I know what the Minneapolis police regulations say. I know what my training told me. I know what my superiors told me. But the union told me I didn't have to follow any of that stuff. And so what I did was right. That would have been a very different outcome. I don't think they would have gotten him on second and third degree murder. I think they would have only gotten him on manslaughter because then what he has to do is basically bring in his past experience saying, oh, I did all bad stuff all the time and I never got corrected. So what am I supposed to think here? And it's actually an interesting argument. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it'd be justice. Mm-hmm. But if you're Derek Chauvin, if he would have presented that, I'll be interesting to see if any of the other officers do that. Because the reality is that the, you know, it's – there clearly is – when you've got the level of racial profiling that's going on in the Minneapolis police that's going on right now. And Bob Kroll, who has recently left, who was pandering to the Republicans, and the Republicans, who are pandering to the racists in their districts. It's not difficult to see how you get a line here, and how then the question then becomes, how much did that impact how the police are doing their job in Minneapolis? And I think it's substantial.
I think you're absolutely right. That would have been Chauvin's best defense. Here's what I would think as to maybe why he didn't go down that route. It's kind of cynical, but maybe the union was funding his defense.
I checked into that. It was the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, but the union dues go into that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is that question of whether or not they would have allowed them to do that defense. But, you know, it would be an interesting defense.
Because he could have been left out on his own for paying for that defense if they say, all right, you're going to throw us under the bus. No more defense costs for you.
Well, that's actually that next question. If he would have said anything negative about the union, would the new union then not have – would they have not funded his defense team? That's interesting. So how much time have you spent in Bemidji?
Oh, not since I was a kid when we did a family reunion up there.
You saw the great statue up there?
Oh, why? I saw the video of those. They clearly look like they're high school kids, but
I think they're drunk too. Bemidji's historic Paul Bunyan statue suffered a broken arm after one person hung from the giant lumberjack's right arm. That, according to a surveillance video of the incident of the Bemidji Police Department released on Friday, the video shows a person hanging on Paul Bunyan's arm with at least four other people watching. Imagine every one of them going, dude. The person that appears to be using Paul's arm climbs up the statue, but then the arm breaks and he falls to the ground. As Paul's arm swings slightly, the group begins to leave the park. The video shows the release of the surveillance video comes to the police work to identify the people involved. Police are asking anyone for information. I'll post the story later to call the Crime Stoppers up there. That's, you know, they're not going to tolerate that.
No, it would have been poetic justice. I don't want to see anyone get hurt, but it would have been kind of funny if the arm actually fell over onto the guy who was trying to climb and pull the thing.
I would have loved it if Paul just got off this. Okay, it's time for me to clean house now.
Oh, that's
just pounding on people.
Waving that axe.
Babe kind of blowing them across the street over there. I will say, I've talked about this, that Bemidji is the weirdest town I ever lived in. I worked up there at KKBJ up there.
The weirdest is the way you're describing it.
It is the weirdest town I have ever worked in, because there are three distinct groups of people in that town, and those lines just do not cross. The natives, the BSU grads, Bemidji State University grads, and then anyone else who's not a native or a BSU grad, you are never welcomed into those two groups, and you have to find your own friends and do your own thing. And those, there was one night I first had gotten up to the station. I was working up there, and I went out just on my own, walk into what is a locals bar, and I didn't know, and walk in there, and there's like five of the guys from the station. Not everyone from the station, but like five guys from the station, because the BSU grads were over at their bar. And I said, "Hey, hi, guys." And you know, I was like, "Oh, can I join you?" And I sat down, and they all just kind of sat and stared. Like, you know, we don't talk to you. And it was really uncomfortable. Like 15 minutes, hardly anyone said a thing. And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, guys. I'm gonna take off. All my best. Take care." And it wasn't until later someone told me, so, "Oh, yeah, you, the townies don't talk to you guys, man. You're not from around here." It is a weird thing. But what I will say is this. Nothing will unify that town more than that statue, because that statue is that's an iconic gold right there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's just a weird story that no one would talk to you for.
It's
for
just
very little.
OK, now, OK, let's put it this way. I mean, I'm not exactly Mr. Personality, but I mean, the same. So, and I mean, I get it. You're the new guy in town. You sometimes look there. No, it was kind of funny because we'd go and do events. And no one from the station, hardly anyone from the station would show up, because that was a other group bar. Mm-hmm. That was one of those places. We don't go to that bar because that's for the tourists. That's for the people that have moved here. That's not for BSU grads. And of course, you know, it just was one of those things where you're like, oh, okay. But at the same time, you know, it's like I said, nothing will unify that community more than someone breaking Paul Bunyan's arm.
Oh, I think all three of those groups you mentioned, yeah, probably aren't happy that someone was trying to do a little TikTok stunt with Paul Bunyan's arm or whatever.
Begrudgingly, they're going to come together and find who this is. I'm going to guess locals, and I'm going to guess drunk.
Well, I mean, you and I both saw the surveillance video. Without a doubt, high school or college aged and probably inebriated in some form.
Oh, my. Just all of a sudden something dawned on me. If that was like BSU guys, that town could blow up. That town could blow up. Locals would be livid if some BSU grads broke Paul Bunyan's arm.
What would the response be if it actually was locals, just townies that did it?
I don't think the weight of that would have as much significance if it was the other way. If a BSU grads or BSU students had busted the arm. The locals will be livid.
Look at BSU all out of control.
See, like those kids. And there's nothing they're going to do about it.
Yeah.
Like, you people there with your higher education and nice campus. Beautiful campus. Have you ever been up to that campus?
Not on the college, no.
Oh, it's a gorgeous campus. Very nice. Right there on the lake. Very pretty. But that being said, that will blow up, man. Or if it was tourists, get out. Okay. Just get out. Don't come back.
If it was BSU students, we need to move Bemidji State. We can no longer have it in our town. Oh, wait. There goes half our population.
Bemidji is its own little thing because it is far enough out there. It's not an Iron Range town. It's not Brainerd in Alexandria. It's not International Falls. It's not the Dakotas, the Grand Forks and Moorhead. It's not like that. It's just its own little beacon out there, and they've got their own little world.
It's not too unsimilar from other dissimilar from other college towns, though, that are located in small towns. I don't know if it's quite to the same degree as what you're describing in Bemidji.
I've been in like St. Olaf. Go to Northfield.
Right.
There's much more of a merging there.
Mm-hmm.
You go down to Mankato. I mean, there's much more. I mean, well, Mankato State, they love each other down there. You know, it's really an odd thing. I've never seen anything like it, man. I've never seen anything like it. We do have to make an automated Paul Bunyan, though.
I mean, it's like,
ho, ho, come back here, you.
Well, I'm not trying to do Santa or the Jolly Green Giant.
I'm Paul Bunyan. Let me give you a little bit of my axe or something.
That could be a great security system. Motion sensors and the axe starts swinging. If it's like during off hours, if someone starts trying to go and mess around, the axe starts moving a little bit.
Get the daily picking up of cleaved in two bodies down by Lake Bemidji. Oh, another night. Kids trying to get out of control, but Paul and Babe took care of them.
Once the sun goes down, no one goes and sees Paul Bunyan and has come back and live to tell about it.
People living in fear in that town. I don't want to go home. I don't want to go near the statue. Anyway, so on that bright note, if you do know who broke Paul Bunyan's arm, turn the rat jerks in. We want to know who did it. It's actually it's the screensaver on my computer.
Here oh, that's right. It is on that thing.
It's Paul Bunyan from Bemidji. How dare you? How dare you?
That security measure would have effect, though.
It was a very Saw kind of experience up there, but we have you have an interview for us today.
Yeah, we have Representative Kalee Hershey is the House Majority Whip, so one of the members of the DFL leadership, as we're talking through the final few days of the session, because as you might imagine, it's a little bit busy down there at the Capitol right now. So we'll be talking about some of the bills they're working on with police reform and also housing.
All right. Brett Johnson with an interview right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Friday afternoon. Appreciate Representative Kalee Hershey. She is the House Majority Whip in the DFL-controlled State House. She is from District 64A. Very busy time of the state legislature, as Representative Hershey has taken some time to join us here on the show to talk about the end of session. Hey, thanks so much for joining me right now. I know this is a very, very busy time down at the Capitol.
Well, thank you for having me. I think it's always really important for us to take time to let people know what's going on, so I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first question I got to ask you right here is that typically when we have the end of a legislative session, and especially in a budget here like this, we typically see things go down to the wire, which can often be frustrating for Minnesotans to watch and say, well, why do the legislative members always wait till the end to get things done? By the way, that's not unique to Minnesota. That's true in just about every state. But what would be your best answer if someone out there who maybe doesn't follow politics that closely sits there and looks and sees, well, oh, they're going down to the wire again, they can't get their work done. What would you say to that in terms of why we so often go down to the wire, especially in these budget years?
Sure, and you know, I can see why Minnesotans would see the work and it being the timeline. We do work on a really tight timeline. I mean, if we think about it, we have a part-time legislature and we only have about 5 months in the odd year to do this and 4 months in the even years. And so the whole time we're always having our bills presented and brought forward in committee. And, you know, the process itself is just a little bit clunky. And so after all of the hearings are done and the bills are packaged together, we get together and we look at what the Senate has put together. We look at what we've put together in the House. We look at what the governor is proposing. And then we all sort of come together and we negotiate once we know the budget targets. And so it always feels like that, but we get the budget targets really late. There's a lot of things that go into understanding the revenues that our states will be generating, what are additional sources of funding that will be coming from the federal government. And so, because we have to take all of those things into consideration, the process kind of feels like it goes down to the wire, but, you know, our leaders continue to meet and negotiate these budget targets, and our conference committees are meeting right now to see, you know, where we have similar provisions and where there are differences and to reconcile the differences between the House and the Senate bills. And so, I mean, you know, even though it feels like it's coming under the wire, we always, and I'm an eternal optimist, so I always hope and I always feel like we're going to come to an agreement and get it all done on time. So session has been certainly more challenging this year because of the need to work remote and staff working from home. I feel very optimistic that we will be able to get everything done and wrapped up by May 17th.
You're still a relatively fresh face on the Capitol, being that you were only elected back in 2018, and this is your second foray into a budget cycle. And I'm just curious how you're talking about your experience in terms of now going through this the second time. Has anything been different for you this time around compared to the last session we had back in 2019? That would have been your first budget session. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, there's nothing you can do in your life that prepares you to be a legislator. And there's no institution that you can be a part of that kind of gives you an idea of the structure of what the legislature will be like. And so, you know, I came in really, even though I had a really broad background in so many things, coming in, it's just really a challenge to understand what's actually happening. And so, you know, that first year, I was really just being a part of as many things as I could and learning as much as I could. And oftentimes, I sort of felt a little bit lost. I didn't know what was going on. Even the calendar itself changes from year to year and when certain things, you know, are wrapped up and when we start other things. And so I would say that it's really hard to compare the 1 year to another. I can say that, though I was very, you know, learning and a little bit lost that first year, I feel like this year has been so insightful because I do have a foundation for it. And I have to really, you know, credit Speaker Hortman and Majority Leader Winkler for putting as much structure as possible to this really ambiguous system. And so, you know, I have been really lucky in that I get to serve in the tax committee this year, and I was assigned to the conference committee on taxes. And so it has made really following the process so much more concrete for me. And so I would say that this year I've had a lot of good learnings, a lot of great insights about just not, you know, what are we proposing to how we appropriate and use funds? But how do we generate revenue so that we are able to do some of this work? And so I would say that between the 2 year, I feel much more productive this year. But I think that it's just because I have a much better knowledge base coming into this budget year.
Well, I do want to talk about what you and some of the other members of the DFL-controlled House are working on with specific bills here in the final few days. But before we get to that, of course, yesterday we had Governor Tim Walz announcing the rollback of some of the COVID restrictions that we've had in place for the past year or so. And I'm curious, from your perspective, could this maybe tamper down some of the conflicts we've had between the DFL and the GOP now that some of these restrictions have been lifted a little bit? I saw a comment from Governor Walz thinking, well, maybe some of the more personal rhetoric we've seen maybe won't be quite as hot now that these restrictions have been lifted, and maybe we're going to get some in-person meetings. Talk about the impact that might have in terms of the negotiations during the final few days, since, well, especially Republicans have not been happy with some of the COVID restrictions we've had in place.
Absolutely. And COVID restrictions and emergency powers are an ongoing discussion point in negotiations. You know, there's been a constant struggle between using this as leverage for negotiating, you know, getting rid of the governor's executive powers. But, you know, I think that what we have to do is first credit Minnesotans for having done such a great job in working hard and keeping each other safe and getting themselves vaccinated. For us, just, you know, having 60% of our population vaccinated, we are leading and doing some of this work, which really did allow the governor to be able to ease up on some of these restrictions. And I would say that even though I've been in the legislature for a short time, there is an enormous difference between being able to see somebody in person and to see their expressions and to be able to interact with each other and to be able to talk through an issue. That's invaluable. And so us doing this work remotely does pose a challenge. We've been able to get a lot accomplished remotely, but I think that in this critical part of the work that we are doing, that ability to see each other, to talk to each other, to be in the same space will really help, I think, with the negotiations. I also think that with the governor easing up on that, there will be less of a reason to sort of use this as a negotiation tool to try to get certain things into these into final negotiations. And so I think that on many levels, this will help us in making sure that we come to agreement and finish by the time we promised Minnesotans that we would.
We're speaking with Representative Kalee Herr from District 64A, which includes portions of St. Paul. She is also the House Majority Whip. And want to talk through some of the issues you guys have been working on and some of the bills the DFL control House would like to see passed in the coming days. And one that I think has me at least concerned, at least an issue, has to do with housing, because earlier this week we did have a federal judge strike down that CDC eviction moratorium. And there is eventually going to be a gigantic fiscal cliff for a lot of people who rent and own homes. So I'm curious at the Capitol what you guys are doing to try to work on making sure people are able to stay in their homes, especially once that eviction moratorium could be lifted both at the state and federal level.
Absolutely, and that is a really great question. And I will just have to lift up the work that Chair Houseman, who is the chair of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee, has done in putting together a really strong omnibus bill. I also sit on that committee with her, and you know that was something that weighed heavily on our minds. How do we protect renters and homeowners during the pandemic, ensuring that they're able to stay in their homes, you know, during this difficult time. But how do we ensure that landlords are able to also get the payments that they need? And so there has been work around an off-ramp for the moratorium. But I will have to say that I'm really proud of some of the bills that we've worked on. You know, we know that housing and affordability doesn't change because we're in a pandemic. And so we worked on manufacturer park infrastructure grant programs to allow, you know, to allow affordable housing that is not what we traditionally see in just in home ownership and single family units. Right? We have a workforce ownership program that we worked on that will help increase the amount of workforce and affordable home ownership projects throughout Minnesota. We, you know, continue to support our Homework Starts at Home. And we know that during this pandemic, our children really suffered when it comes to education and the digital divide and the loss of learning. It continued to exacerbate the achievement gap. And that we know that our children need a stable place to be able to do homework. And so funding and supporting Homework Starts at Home was really critical and was included in our omnibus bill. But, you know, there's also so many other things like our Bridge Rental Assistance Program or the Homeowners Assistance Fund that we worked really hard in saying, what are the different ways in which we can support, you know, stable housing for people, regardless of the type of housing that they live in. And so I am really proud of those provisions that were included into this bill. But in addition to that, we did also include long-term tenant protection bills about discrimination on, you know, for those who use public assistance to pay for their rent or, you know, evictions and, you know, how long they stay in someone's record, even if an issue has been resolved. That housing is very, very big, and it extends beyond just what happens during this pandemic time. And so we were looking at short-term, how do we keep people in their unit? How do we help once the moratorium is lifted? But then also, how do we set up our families and residents in Minnesota for long-term homeownership and stability in housing?
Another topic that's certainly been big at the Capitol has been police reform, especially in light of the conviction of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin in the murder of George Floyd. We have seen some action on police reform in the past, but obviously there's certainly a lot more that still needs to be done. There's different bills working their way through the House and at least trying to get through the Senate that would at least stop the hiring of officers who have ties to white supremacist groups. There's also some proposals that would include releasing body camera footage in a timely manner. What I'm curious about from your end, Representative Herr, is that so often from the Senate we hear that, well, Republicans aren't interested at all really in talking about any additional police reform. But what's the temperature at least on the House side in terms of trying to enact some of these additional measures to try to improve our law enforcement system in Minnesota?
Well, you know, the will is there in the DFL-controlled Minnesota House. We've had a number of hearings. We continue to put forward what we believe and we think is very much, you know, common sense reforms. And we know that what we did last year, right, was just the beginning. There was a lot that we could have done, and we worked really hard with our colleagues across the aisle and was able to get some reform, but that was just the beginning, and we were very clear that that was just the beginning. And so what we have put forward this year is, you know, a couple of different pieces that, you know, Chair Mariani and his committee have worked on, sign and release warrants, limiting traffic stops, early warning systems. You know, this is around the post board database and how we the post board oversees our policing, you know, model policy for public assemblies. There's just so many. There's asking for civilian oversight councils and statutes of limitation and no-knock warrants. I mean, there are just many, many things that we think are so common sense that doesn't require big systems changes. And so we continue to put these forward. We heard Representative Long and Representative Vang's bill yesterday that would have prevented the death of Dante, and the fact that, you know, he had an outstanding warrant, but he was never notified of it because it was sent to the wrong address, and this would be fixing that particular issue. And so we continue, even till this, you know, till up till yesterday, having hearings on bills that we think are very critical in ensuring that our police officers have the resources they need to do their jobs well, but also that our community members are protected from things that can be prevented very easily with some of these bills.
And some of these are just so common sense, as you're talking about, whether it's preventing the no-knock warrants or the one that still boggles my mind that is not working its way through the Senate, which would basically prevent departments from hiring officers that have ties to white supremacist groups. I mean, so many of these are common sense. It's got to be frustrating sometimes to realize that, well, not all these bills might necessarily not get signed into law, even though a lot of these really should. They're very, very much common sense.
It absolutely is. You know, and the truth is that, you know, it's a challenge to really, if someone doesn't understand, if their worldview is very limited to their life experience and they're unable to see that there are different people who experience the justice system differently than they do, then to them, they don't understand that the importance of why some of these things that seem so simple need to get done. Because for, you know, something as small as what you're talking about, right, how that bias in that officer shows up in his job and then how that translates to how certain people he stops are treated becomes an enormous burden on those individuals. And we know that it is a small segment of our population that carries the disproportionate burden of the impact of negative policing, right? And so I think that the more we work with each other and the more we are able to share our stories with our Senate Republicans, that I have the hope that it'll open up their worldview and understanding, you know, that this is an important issue and it doesn't have to impact them, but it does impact Minnesotans and it impacts them severely. And what do we need to do in order to change that?
I think you hit the nail on the head right there with those personal stories. I remember back to the debate we had in 2012 on gay marriage and the voter ID bill, where it was often those personal stories that were really able to change minds. So, yeah, hopefully that same thing can happen, at least in terms of some of these police reform ideas.
I hope so, too. But like I said earlier, I'm an eternal optimist.
Yeah.
I believe in the good of people. And so I have hope that we will get to that place.
Absolutely. Hey, we've been speaking with Representative Kalee Herr. She is the House Majority Whip in the DFL-controlled House. She represents District 64A, which includes portions of St. Paul. I know it's been a very busy time for you, Representative Herr, so definitely appreciate you taking the time today.
Well, thank you for having me on, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share with you all of the great work we've been doing at the state legislature.
And we'll take a break and turn things back over to Matt McNeil up next on AM 950.
I've been trying to think of Paul Bunyan trash talk. In case you missed it, of course, the story is some knucklehead decided to climb up on the Paul Bunyan statue and it broke its arm. And they're trying to track down who the individual is. I mean, like I said, not exactly an upstanding individual. But, you know, if you did that, what would Paul say back to you? You know, it's like, I'm going to make you my babe. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot he could. There's not many he could do. I mean, I'm a lumberjack.
I'm going to kick your axe.
Oh, there you go. okay. I like that one. You know, I made the Great Lakes with my feet, and so I know how to stomp on someone. I don't know. I don't know if that's a. You know, it doesn't hold up. It doesn't hold up. That sort of thing. Well, I will say this. I mean, it's like I said, my experience in Bemidji probably is very different than a lot of other people's experience. That's what it was like. It was weird being in town. And I had friends who were not BSU students and not locals, who are the people like myself who came in and moved in, and I became friends with them and still have friends with one or two of them still today. But it was a weird experience in that town. It was very weird. And I actually would be concerned and I'm dead serious, if that was BSU students that broke that arm, I don't think that would go over too well in that city. I think there would be a lot of conflict going on there. It is probably the prettiest place I've ever lived in my entire life. I was at the Bemidji State Park up on the north side of the lake there. Just spectacular. Just spectacular up there. The bike trails that are out there, there's snowmobile trails in the winter, but they're bike trails in the summer. I was able to do biking. Oh, man, it was just gorgeous out there. I flushed a moose on one trail. That scared the living daylights out of me. But, yeah, just gorgeous area, as pretty as it gets. But it's kind of an interesting town, just kind of an interesting place. Don't hurt Paul Bunyan. Don't get on top of Babe. I have to double turn this entire state around and take you all home. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Indeed, head on over there. A lot of great options for you for Mother's Day. Mom's Day, of course, on the 9th here up on Sunday. If you don't have anything, one of the things I find to be amazing is that every time I've ever gone into a floral shop and stuff, that you'd say to yourself, oh, there's no way they're going to run out of flowers. I mean, a lot of places are out of flowers, or they're charging an arm and leg. Find something better for them. Go over to AM 950 Radio. Go check out our great advertisers. Go to the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurants. Check them out. You can take mom on out, get yourself a nice Mother's Day meal with them, spend some time with them. Get it to go. Go find a nice park where there's some flowering trees, and bon appetit. There you go. There you go. Enjoy your Mother's Day this weekend with AM 950. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Two stories which I wanted to touch on in regards more to the idea of that Republicans just don't seem to understand the concept of the free market. They like to scream, socialism! like a drunk Florida resident, apparently. Socialism! They like to scream that, but the reality is there has been, and I touched on this week, the story of what you're seeing with Republicans who are responding to employers within their state saying, I can't find enough workers to come work for me for the crap wages I'm paying. And the Republicans' response is to try to make people's lives worse to make those jobs more palatable, rigging the system. And I'm fascinated by this. You've seen it now in Montana and South Carolina, where in both of those states, they're ending the extra unemployment early just to purposely hurt their residents to try to make crap jobs with no real good wages, with no really good benefits, with a boss that probably doesn't really care that much about his employees. They're trying to make these jobs more palatable, not by making things better for people, but by making things worse, which is truly weird, because the reality is, if you can't find people to fill your jobs, but people who are paying $17, $18, $19 an hour, they got to line out the door, people applying for those jobs. That's called the free market. And you being upset because you can't just pay your crap wages anymore within your community and get people working, you know, in the store, doesn't mean it's not the free market. You're the one that's failing at delivering and offering a product that's palatable to the worker. That's no one else's fault. That's yours. You have failed the free market system because you're more concerned about how in the world could I possibly prevent people from having too nice of a life to where this job looks good. I mean, that is crazy. The free market system works on a lot of different levels. And one of them is we as the people don't have to work for you if you're not going to pay us a decent wage, you're not going to give us decent benefits, and you're not going to basically have a safe and courteous work environment. And you basically belly aching to Republicans. I got to tell you the truth. The Republicans have been the party that you, if you want to know how broken they are, think about this. Think about that fundamental change to capitalism, the free market that they are proposing, that workers, we have to make the workers' lives worse so that the person who's offering the crap wage doesn't actually have to pay a more livable wage. Wow, that's some cray cray there. That is nuts. But that's where Republicans are at. You know, punish the people and then hope that, you know, that all of a sudden that bad job seems like a better option. There's another story today, and this is going to be great because we talked earlier this week about Bill Ingebrigtsen, who does not like the concept of the clean car technology in Minnesota. He has been one of those guys that's, matter of fact, we talked about this yesterday. He put on an ultimatum that said unless the
Minnesota Pollution Control Agency relinquished its ability to set clean car standards in Minnesota and gave that to the legislature, they would shut down the entire environmental budget, the omnibus bill, for the, including all the parks, for the DNR itself, for all these research studies, Minnesota Zoo, Science Museum. All these things would be shut down unless the Democrats agreed to move clean car technology and decisions out of the MPCA and move them into the legislature, which the Republicans want because they know they can tie it up in there and they can basically try to, you know, prevent anything from getting done. I've told the Democrats that they shouldn't do this. And once again, it should be mentioned who was the Republican, or excuse me, the Democrat who basically had Ingebrigtsen, Senator Ingebrigtsen, restate, "You're saying you're going to shut down all this stuff unless we do this?" And he said, "That's correct." So he confirmed it. But now he's basically, he came back out and he said, "Well, you guys misinterpreted my ultimatum as an ultimatum." Well, you're an idiot. How about we say it like that? You're an idiot. And I said to, we talked yesterday on the show, if the Republicans want to shut down the environmental budget, do they realize how much money that's going to cost their districts by shutting down the state parks? Most of the state parks are not in Democratic areas. You need those tourism dollars. You can't stop Republicans from, you know, hurting themselves, and you should not. They are banking on the Democrats caring for their constituents more than they do, and that's not a good standard to have. And so I my mentality is, you know, if they're dumb enough to do this, well, that's on them. Well, the reason I brought this whole thing up again is the Clean Cars Minnesota program cleared a significant hurdle on Friday when an administrative law judge recommended the proposed rules be adopted. There are three key conclusions. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency did indeed establish it has statutory authority to adopt the clean car rules. The MPCA complied with all procedural requirements of law and rule, and the proposed rules are both needed and reasonable. Therefore, the administrative law judge approves the proposed rules and recommends they be adopted. Oh, you know Bill Ingebrigtsen's blowing his top. The inception of the Clean Cars Minnesota dates back to 2019 when Governor Tim Walz directed the MPCA to begin a rulemaking process to adopt new standards on vehicle emissions. As currently written, the rules would preserve currently existing standards regarding car emissions, would also require dealerships to make more electric and hybrid vehicles available for purchase, which, by the way, are still wildly popular, which is the free market. And this is getting back to the other point here. The Republicans want to kind of ignore the fact that a lot of people want either an electric car or a hybrid. And because of what they have done, they have limited the ability for people to get electric vehicles. That's not the free market. The free market is if you allow people to buy electric vehicles and they buy electric vehicles. And you see, and here's where the fraud is with them. They're not for capitalism. They're for what they've been paid to push. And they're paid a ton of money by the gas oil industry to make sure combustible car engines are the only engines that go forward, regardless of climate change. And so they are saying that there is no need for electric vehicles, even though I think what was the waiting list? Someone told me the waiting list for a Tesla is like a year now. A year. And that's the only one. And there's like hardly any dealerships in the state, for God's sakes. So this is, once again, Republicans are not for capitalism, because here's your second story where they are openly blocking the free market from making their choices because they have been bought and paid for to stop people from having these choices. So these standards would not apply to existing or used vehicles, farm equipment, other heavy duty vehicles, nor would they mandate anyone purchase a hybrid or electric vehicle. So it basically is just saying people have the choice. That's all this bill is saying, is that people should have the choice of more electric cars. Fresh Energy, which supports Clean Car Minnesota rules, described Friday's update as the last major hurdle to final adoption. Other environmental groups also celebrated the news. Conservation Minnesota said Minnesota is officially set to become a clean car state. Minnesota Center for Environmental Agency climate policy analyst Carolyn Benninger in an email said, Minnesota must do more to avoid the worst impacts of climate change, and adopting a clean car rule is a critical step to do so. And once again, I want to make sure we are very clear here. No one's going to be forced to buy any car they don't want to buy. This doesn't get rid of you know, gasoline-powered vehicles. It doesn't mandate anyone's car goes away. It doesn't mandate any farm equipment or anything else goes away. It just means that people, when they walk onto a lot, will have more choices. And trust me, I believe most of the major auto companies have either already have a good electric vehicle in place or are coming out with brand new electric vehicles because of other places that sell them. So this is just about the free market. Republicans say that it will increase the average price of new cars by $25,000. And while the Walz administration concedes the rule will likely push the electric average price of new cars up, it will be closer to $1,000. He also argues those buying electric or more fuel efficient vehicles would either would save more on that just on gas, while electric car owners would also have reduced maintenance costs. Earlier this week, Senate GOP took the step of threatening to shut down the state parks, the DNR, the Minnesota Zoo, the Science Museum, and more if the Clean Car Minnesota rules aren't rescinded. Republicans have also argued that because Minnesota's clean car rules is modeled on California's, the state would be beholden to any changes California makes. God, they can't win on it. When they can't win, they just become pathetic. The MPCA has said any changes in California would start another rulemaking process with public input and considered to be updates. And once again, what did the judge rule here? Minnesota Pollution Control Agency did indeed establish it has the statutory authority to adopt the clean car rules. The MPCA complied with all procedural requirements of law and rule, and proposed rules are both needed and reasonable. So Republicans don't really have anywhere to go outside of just scream, ah! But don't get me wrong. I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to run back to their districts and they're going to say, your truck is going away, and your mother is going away, and great-great-granddaddy's pickup truck is going away. And that's what they're going to do. And they're going to scare people. And no, the only thing this does is it makes that sure that people have more choices when it comes to vehicle options. It's the free market. And if a person wants to buy an electric vehicle, we should not be in the business of stopping people from being able to make their own choice. And plus the fact, climate change is real, you knuckleheads. If we don't do something about this now, this planet's screwed. So stop. Stop. Because I don't want you guys coming out in 20 years going, you know, some people here want to just focus on the last 50 years of us telling them that climate change wasn't real. But now that we've agreed that it is, we're just trying to make sure we move forward at this point, even though the flaming lava pits are coming for us all. I don't need that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, wrap up the show when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. It is funny, you know. I don't want to pay people a livable wage. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll make their lives horrible so they have no choice. We'll call that the free market. No, that's not. Free market is the people avoiding that job and going to get the better paying jobs. We're going to stop you. We want to stop you from having the choice of an electric car. I mean, to a point, you know why? Because people want them. It's like the light rail line. They will fight tooth and nail every time they want to build a new light rail line. Not because they're not good and they spurn growth. They make the city far more navigable and transportationable. It gets allowed people to get from point A to point B, but because they just don't like the idea of that, and they're paid by, you know, the big gas, big oil to basically stop mass transportation. And they can't stand the cities. So that's just – they're idealists that don't realize their decisions are killing the free market. Once again, do want to make sure I mention Mother's Day coming up here, and Park Tavern are good friends over there. It's good to see them back at it. They've got their Mother's Day brunch coming up here on May 9th from 10 until 2. All the good stuff that they have over there. They're doing it cafeteria style, so go over there if you'd like. But you got to get reservations. You got to get reservations. Call for reservations. Don't go over there. Call for reservations first. The Park Tavern, enjoy that over there. It's good to see them coming back, but it's good to see a lot of people coming on back as well. Final thing today, we're going to go back up to the Cook News Herald. Of course, if you haven't joined us for the last few weeks, we've discovered the editorial page of the Cook News Herald, which is done by this weird dude. And yeah, he says a lot of really weird, inappropriate things. And it's he talked about Mother's Day this time. But he goes, the pandemic is winding down rapidly, and though the media won't admit it, a large thanks has got to go to Donald Trump and his plan to get vaccines available. Okay. Once again, we talked about this. Sure, you can definitely give the Trump administration the credit for loosening regulations to get vaccines to market. But considering he basically seemed to filter vaccinations only to Republican areas of the country, and then when Joe Biden took over, there was no stockpile of vaccines, there was no infrastructure plan to get vaccines out, and there was, clearly he wasn't prepared for the task at hand. But of course, then he comes back, this editorial here in the Cook News Herald. Of course, crazy Joe Biden, our apparent president, is taking all the credit, or at least is given a sheet of paper to read saying he's responsible. Who cares? We're getting back to normal. Is that the fact that he did the who cares? We're getting back to normal. Is that somewhat an admission that, yeah, Joe Biden has done a good job? That's too funny. It's these people are broken. That's all it is these people are broken. It is good. We are starting to open up again. Once again, we did have those let me shuffle through my briefs here. We did have some regulations open today that open things. Outdoor events are pretty open right now. Most outdoor restrictions ended at noon on Friday, other than the provision on the mandate requiring workers to wear masks if they can't maintain social distancing to do their jobs. Masks also required for indoor-outdoor entertainment venues hosting more than 500 people. So guess what? We're getting past it. And that's good news. And after a long week for me on a personal level, I'm all for some good news. I am all for some good news. You still, though, we got to get call your friends. Find out who you has not gotten vaccinated. Get as many people. Encourage them to get vaccinated. Help them find an appointment. Let's get this done. Let's get the face mask mandate gone as soon as possible. Have a great weekend. Be safe. We're back on a Monday. Till then, see ya.